It is Monday, September 23rd, 2019, and this is No Filter Sports with Eli Zarrett. That's me. Denny McClain.
That's me.
And Bob Page. And we got a ton to talk about today. Boy, football just loads you up with all kinds of stuff. And we're going to talk to the winningest coach in Lions history. Yes, it's true. The one and only Wayne Fonts.
I can't believe we're all still alive.
But let me say something about Friday night before we go. Okay?
What happened Friday?
I went to the ball game Friday night.
Oh, you're not going to start?
Not
no,
with
please.
The Tigers.
And I started.
Out of here.
I took a group round there from Make-A-Wish. It was a wonderful time until I got the check. And 12 hot dogs, 6 Pepsis, 2 sausage dogs, 2 chips, 2 bags of chips, another 2 bags of taco chips, ketchup and mustard, 2 beers, 1 soda water bottle, and 1 bottle of vodka.
Now, by the way, I saw this earlier, just, you know, and I took regular prices. Like, you'd pay $6 for a beer, $5 for a hot dog, regular restaurant prices, and I evaluated this list at about $190. You paid
$594.
That includes
American
tip.
Money. Includes
only a 10% tip.
Yeah, $60. Okay. $60 is a big tip.
And let me ask you this question, because I know nothing about this kind of thing. Maybe you do. What kind of a revolver did they have pointed at your head to make you do this?
Well,
or did you do this?
You know, it was wining and dining some people from Make-A-Wish, and they do great work around the state of Michigan,
and they ordered a whole bottle of vodka,
and they won. They did. They won a trip to the Tiger game with Denny McClain, and Denny McClain was supposed to buy them dinner. Well, Denny McClain bought them dinner, all right.
By the way, this vodka, he had to buy an entire bottle. It was Smirnoff, which I evaluated at probably a lofty $18, probably less than that.
And by the way, Denny's not being fully honest here. In the interest of full disclosure, the second prize of the contest, 2 trips to a Tiger game with Denny McClain.
Anyway, let's start with the pain. Let's go to the pain. It's haters heaven for Michigan, and I don't blame them. Michigan's not a national power anymore, and I must say, I'm not a soothsayer, but I did tweet on Friday because I had a feeling. This is what I tweeted. I'm quoting myself, which is probably a bad move anyway, but Eli Zarrett tweeted on Friday, "The Michigan game as underdogs at Wisconsin Saturday gives me an apocalyptic feeling in regards to the Harbaugh era. The chorus of criticism that will greet an M loss will be deafening." Well, it was, and it deserves to be. It's a trite saying. It is what it is. This is not my tweet. I'm saying this now. It is what it is, meaning we saw more of the same of what we've been seeing, but hadn't wanted to believe that what we've been seeing represented what they really are. Well, it was. The emperor has no clothes, no teeth, a poorly coached team of outstanding players, very undisciplined. By the way, before you chime in, here's what Harbaugh himself, quite self-effacingly, admitted afterwards.
You know, Wisconsin had a great game plan, executed it extremely well, outplayed us offensively and defensively. Things they did really well, we were unable to do. Out-prepared and out-coached. Outplayed the whole thing.
So, out-coached, out-prepared, outplayed. Pretty obvious. What else is he going to say? I'll let either of you chime in at this point.
Bob, I'll let you
deeper.
Go first.
All right. I was interested in one of the greatest players Michigan ever produced, and probably the greatest left tackle I ever saw on the college level, Jake Long, showed a video of the team on Twitter. And the video had Michigan just lollygagging onto the field instead of hustling, and Jake did not like it. Now, when you look at a guy like Jake Long and 2 more of the greatest Michigan players who ever lived, Charles Woodson and Braylon Edwards, ripping their alma mater's football team, you got a problem. In an interview on Sunday, Josh Metalla said they just weren't ready to play. Really? Why not? I've always said this, and Denny, you're a former major league athlete. If a pro player, a grown man whose livelihood is on the line every day, is not ready to play, then he and his family have a big problem. But college students, college boys not being ready to play, that is the coach's responsibility to get them ready.
Well, let me say this to you. First of all, the heart doesn't appear to be there. Maybe that's because of the emotion that is not there to begin with. No intensity. The game plan, whatever the hell it was hidden very well from even anybody who knows anything about football. But this sums it up pretty good, guys. If this doesn't do it, nothing does. Tight end Nick Eubanks. Uh-huh. This is his quote after the game. "As a whole group, we don't have an identity yet. And left tackle John Runyon said, "We just can't play ball anymore like we did last year. We're going to get our butts kicked every week."
And
isn't that a hell of a thing for a player to say?
Well, as you're both alluding to, it's not the players.
No.
I feel very, very badly for these players. They returned four outstanding offensive line starters, all of whom received all Big Ten honors last year, some in the Outland Trophy watch list. What happens when you don't have confidence in the scheme that you're given, and I feel particularly bad for Shea Patterson, who is a better quarterback than Jack Cohn all day long. And what did Jack Cohn do on one play? Have you ever seen a fourth and one on the goal line where a quarterback sneaks and goes in untouched?
Oh.
So it is Jim Harbaugh. It's Jim Harbaugh all the way. And I'm going to tell you the main thing this year is new offensive coordinator Josh Gattis hasn't a clue.
Hasn't
the players
stepped
have
up.
No confidence in the system. I'm watching the end of the Pittsburgh Central Florida, the UCF game, on the final play of the game.
Which Pittsburgh won, and that's a great win for
right.
Pat Narduzzi, the longtime Michigan State defensive coordinator.
Talking about creativity, on fourth and three, they hike the ball, not to the quarterback, to the halfback and the wildcat, moves left, flips it to the receiver, who goes around the right side and hits the quarterback who chipped off a block in the end zone, and they win the game. Now, when you're a passing team, or every team is a passing team, if you don't go over the middle, you're dead. And all the Michigan plays are to the outside, one-on-one coverage. Nobody is open, no space. What's Shea Patterson supposed to do? Get his ass tackled in the backfield or throw to somebody who's covered? It's very, very sad. And I tell you, you can't get out of Josh Gattis. And why Josh Gattis? Because he comes from Alabama.
Right.
This aura that if it's Alabama, you got to be good. Matt Patricia, we'll see whether Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia are really turned into the Belichicks of the Lions. But just because you come from a good program doesn't mean you know what you're doing.
I just had breakfast, and I feel it coming up all over my desk in front of me.
Oh, stop
Did you
it.
Just compare those guys to Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots? Did you really do that?
No.
Listen to it again.
Excuse me. When you get a guy from a great program, don't assume he's as good as the program he comes from.
Well, yeah. Patricia may be good. You don't know.
I don't know. But Josh Gattis never called the plays. It was Loxley, the guy who's now the Maryland coach, that called the plays. So what does Harbaugh do? He takes Josh Gattis from Alabama, gives him the entire offense, and look what you see so far.
Gattis looks like he's afraid to make a mistake. I mean, every time we get the third down and 1 yard to go, for God's sakes, we run the ball to the same place, either right tackle, left tackle. I mean, I don't understand. Is there another play they've got in the book besides third and one?
How about the 68-yard pass to Ron Bell following Wisconsin's opening drive, and they get to the 7-yard line, and what's the first play?
A timeout!
Then an incomplete pass, and then, let me finish.
I saw something that
and then they hand it to the fullback. Then they hand it to the fullback, who hasn't carried the ball all year long and is also a defensive tackle, and he fumbles.
Fumbles the ball.
Yeah, that was critical. I saw something that disturbed me, I was about to say, from over the weekend. The Dallas Cowboys have cut their number one draft choice from 2 years ago, only 2 years ago, 2017, Taco Charlton. And you know why they cut him? The Cowboys did not like his demeanor, his body language, or his attitude. A Jim Harbaugh coach, University of Michigan player, cut after 2 years. What the hell is going on with these guys who were going to Michigan and coming out of Michigan?
And now
they wouldn't cut him for attitude. There had to be something deeper than that. And sooner or later, the deepness of whatever he did will come to the surface, because Jerry Jones and his son don't know how to keep their mouths shut anyway.
They just know how to win football games.
They certainly do, sometimes.
It's hugely humiliating. Michigan's not a national power. And I don't know whether you're watching the halftime or not. I don't know if they had it in New York or not. But so Charles Woodson, you mentioned him earlier, sitting aside a smirking Urban Meyer, and I don't blame him for that.
I don't either.
And the look, and so the studio host, I think it's Rob Stone is his name, is looking at Woodson, and here's what he said.
Look at the face of Charles over there. We're going to hear it.
I'm hurt.
You should be hurt.
I'm hurting. I need some words of encouragement, give me something.
This is my first weekend on Big Noon Kickoff, and I came here with high expectations for how my team was going to look in front of you guys. And I'll be honest with you, man, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about that.
So as you alluded, Bob, the embarrassment. And I'll tell you, I can't mention names again, but when Harbaugh first came in 5 years ago and a bunch of Michigan former players, stars, were invited to see him address the team the first summer as they started summer camp the first time, and they walked out of that room and go, really? Is he going to do this every day? It's the start of practice. He's already this intense, this crazy, this wild, this manic. Holy. And then that's
disappeared.
Yeah. So
a couple of things. They scored. Wisconsin did the other day. They scored the first five touchdowns and smothering Michigan 35-14, 359 yards to 40 yards.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, it was just a blowout. Just a horrible.
Michigan's leading ball carrier had 17 yards. Yeah. So
now here's the thing. They're all saying in the wake of this game, hey, wait a minute now. You know, our season's not over. And I want to remind everybody that this coming Saturday in Ann Arbor, it's the invasion of mighty Rutgers. Why are they in the Big Ten Conference? Oh, yeah, they deliver the TV market here in New York City. Nobody except RU alums here in New York, and they're not that many of those, gives a damn. Anyway, so Rutgers is at home. Then Michigan has homecoming against a good Iowa team, but they still should beat them. Then they go to Shambana against woeful Illinois and ex-Michigan quarterback Brandon Peters. So Michigan will be 5-1 going into Penn State. Season is not over, guys.
I don't know about that. I don't know if they'll beat Iowa at home. I'm not 100% sure of that.
Can I give you something that Lovie Smith said over the weekend about his Illinois team?
What did Lovie say about the Illinois team?
And he's really adamant about it. I saw it. He said, did the Illinois defense that gave up only 42 points on 690 yards, it has improved.
Yeah. Did you actually see Lovie say that stuff?
I did.
Lovie is now sporting a humongous all white / gray Santa Claus beard.
Yeah.
I would never have even recognized the guy. And his wife lets him go out of the house looking like this. He just added 25 years to his age, the way he looks anyway.
When I saw him, I thought it was a picture out of the post office.
All right. Now, I have a mea culpa here, fellas.
Okay.
On Saturday, I love Michigan. But blood is thicker than water. And the morons at the Big 13 plus Rutgers put Michigan and Michigan State on at the exact same time.
Right.
Pick one or the other. So I picked my alma mater. I watched Michigan State, and they really look good, albeit at Northwestern against what doesn't look like a good Northwestern team. So you look at Indiana coming to East Lansing this Saturday for homecoming. That's a game they should win. But Indiana's not bad anymore. Then State plays at Wisconsin, at Ohio State, home to Penn State. So while everybody's lauding Michigan State and everybody's ripping Michigan, that schedule, plus playing at Ann Arbor this year, has the makings of another Michigan State bid to another Fleabag Bowl. Mm-hmm. Let's not get too excited about this.
Well, they look, you know, so credit them for what they've done. They responded to a really awful game against Arizona State to win 31-10 at Northwestern. By the way, see, My gambling mea culpa over the weekend. I was 3-3 going in. I took Michigan to lose or not, you know.
Yeah.
Certainly weren't going to be on 3.5 points. I lost on State again. State scored, and I did actually win on the Lions. I thought that they would plus +6 in Philadelphia with a very injured Eagles team. But credit to Michigan State, although, you know, it kind of comes and goes. Lewerke seems to have some chemistry. Darryl Stewart, you know, and Cody White are his receivers. Elijah Collins is pretty good. Offensive line creating some holes, but they kind of go dormant from time
to
time.
There's no team.
There was what?
There's no team. Who are you talking about?
Michigan State.
Right?
Michigan
State. Talking about Michigan State, Danny. Pay attention.
Yeah, pay attention.
I'm trying to pay attention. I mean, if it ain't Bob, then it's you all over the place.
They had four straight punts after the opening touchdown. Anyway, I will give them credit. The red zone offense was good. They scored touchdowns their first three tries. They host Indiana, and good for State. They weren't the big story this weekend, but credit to them.
This is what was the big story this week individually in either the Michigan or Michigan State game. And again, it gets back to the University of Michigan recruiting just about any five-star player they want to, certainly in the Midwest. And so many of these kids just not developing. Joe Bocci was a three-star player out of Berea, Ohio, a western suburb of Cleveland. Michigan State recruited him and had to beat Eastern Michigan, Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, Toledo, schools like that. On Saturday, Joe Bocci had 14 solo tackles, was everywhere. Already first team all Big Ten last year. This kid, mark my words, is going to be an outstanding NFL inside linebacker. Now, Mark D'Antonio and his staff have something they do when they look at the defensive films. They assign what they call production points, which gives them an indication of how good a defender really is. If you play a game and you get 17 production points from the Michigan State staff, that's good. You've had a good game. 20 is an outstanding game. Joe Bocci, Saturday at Northwestern, had 53 production points. D'Antonio says, by far the highest grade we have ever assigned a defensive player since I've been here. And by the way, he dwarfed the already great Kenny Willekes, who had a hell of a game himself. But nothing like Bocci. This guy is crazy. He's an animal. He's
Now that you've given his entire resume for the whole world to hear,
I should.
One thing about it, maybe we should send him to Ann Arbor. Let him coach.
Well, I'll tell you, the overall feeling I get, the Michigan State is not a national power. They did go to the championship series a few years ago. But Michigan, to sum it up, they're not a national power.
One more than Michigan's been to.
Yeah, right. Michigan's been to nothing the last 20. They've won one Big Ten title the last 20 years. They're not a national power. And pretty soon, although they make a lot of money and attract a lot of fans and a lot of donors and $125 million, the football program brought in, or the athletic department, that's it. Get used to it, Michigan. You're not a national power anymore, and that's just the way it is.
And Eli, I want to give you another example of the kind of thing I'm talking about, how D'Antonio and his staff get these kids. The story recently I saw, he walked into a gym at UD Jesuit High School on a winter day 4 years ago. D'Antonio sees a sophomore, 15-year-old kid, with a big, strong body. He played basketball there. So D'Antonio asked the basketball coach at UD, Pat Donnelly, what position the kid played on the football team. Donnelly says to D'Antonio, he doesn't play football. He just plays basketball. D'Antonio says, well, he should be playing football, and we want to take a look at him. That was star freshman running back Elijah Collins, who Michigan did not want. You see what I'm saying about this stuff?
Absolutely. No arguments, no apologies, no nothing. Like I said.
But you know what? It's real easy to sit here and second pick everybody that's running a ball club. Or
it's easy and it's valid to pick Jim Harbaugh in Michigan.
Oh,
easy,
listen, I don't
valid
think there's,
and up front.
You will not get an argument out of me with what Ken Harbaugh is doing. I mean, that is awful. It's ugly.
Okay.
And you know what? The best thing he could do?
Resign.
Oh, hey, come on. Are you going to a commercial break
right
now? I got one other thing I want to say about Michigan
Go
State. You cannot praise Michigan State. You cannot talk about D'Antonio's job, passing Duffy Doherty, as he did on Saturday, without talking about, the latest controversy, scandal, and shame at Michigan State University. And this is the former assistant, Curtis Blackwell, who already had filed suit against D'Antonio for wrongful discharge. Now, it turns out in a deposition he made in August, this guy detailed claims that Mark D'Antonio green-lighted the signing of a troubled recruit named Austin Robertson over the objections of two of Michigan State's most trusted assistants. Robertson only played 1 year at MSU. He eventually was charged with sexually assaulting a woman in mid-Michigan, and Robertson is now serving 10 years in prison at the Newberry Correctional Facility in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. There have been some questionable kids that Michigan State has taken under D'Antonio. But again, Harbaugh's cleaning up all the five-star guys in Ohio State and Notre Dame are. What's he supposed to do?
He gets the two- and three-star guys, and he coaches them up, and he has just taken a lot of the Malik McDowells of the world and all them. He's had a lot of problems there. But, I guess you can't credit him for that. You can only fault him for that. But it's what he's been left to do.
How's he going to win?
Right. By the way, D'Antonio releases. Did you see the statement he released Friday, D'Antonio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
What did he say?
He said Blackwell's termination was unrelated to Robertson, and the Michigan State has handled sexual assault allegations against players appropriately.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, let's talk about. We're going to come back and want to talk about the Lions and talk about. Oh, maybe we should hire. Maybe we should hire Mike Leach or Chip Kelly. That score 67 points a game, as they did in the Pac-12. First of all, hey, the reviews are glowing for the 2020 Lincoln Aviator that arrived in Star Lincoln showroom floor just last month. It's an amazing new SUV, as is the Nautilus. the one that I got, the one I leased from
Star. Beautiful car.
Oh, amazing car. Adaptive. In fact, I was braking the other day, hitting my brake because somebody stopped suddenly in front of me. If I hadn't seen it, my collision assist goes beep, beep, beep. It goes red, and it said, so it tells you. If you're making a mistake or not looking, or somebody's coming at you, it tells you. This is an amazing technology.
You know what I like about that car? The great big screen.
It's got a lot of great stuff. Yeah. The comfort, co-pilot 360 built-in radar.
We could watch movies and drive the car too.
Yeah, because it's going to let you know when you're going to crash anyway. Right. So why not just?
You could also have a chauffeur sit in the back with your honey and watch a porn film on it.
I don't have.
That's a great feature of that, Eli. You haven't discussed it.
Well, I don't know if you can get that. I don't know if it comes in the movies at Houghton McInerney Star Lincoln. But come see Star's gorgeous showroom. Buy your new Lincoln. You can also buy it with the effortless ownership experience at Star Lincoln. Order your model, features, color, then just roll in the Star and pick it up. I have gotten all my cars there for the last 10 years, at least five or six Lincolns. I've lost track. It's all part of the Star treatment that's made Houghton McInerney Star Lincoln, Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield, right in the middle of suburban Detroit. Go ahead, Denny.
Now another one of our great Red Shovel Network sponsors, David Hall and Hall Financial, folks. If you are thinking about refinancing your home, Hall Financial would love to save you money, lots of money. You can email David at dhall@hallfg.com or call Hall Financial at 248-308-5000. Maybe it's your first home or your dream home. Maybe you want to take money out of your home like Eli did and spend that money big time. Give David Hall a chance and get lower rates, better options, and much
Eli
more personal
Jarrett
service.
Eli Jarrett has the first penny he ever earned in broadcasting. You think he's going to spend that money?
Yeah, my problem is I get checks that expire and I can't cash them. I hold on to them and so on. Would you please finish this?
I've done that too.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
The industry average, by the way, for refis is 44 days, but Hall Financial averages only 19 days. That's right, 19 days. Take it from the customers. They have over 800 five-star reviews. They will fight for you, even if you've had an accident or a dent in your credit history. Email at dhall@hallfg.com. That's dhall@hallfg.com. Or call 248-308-5000, 248-308-5000, and tell them No Filter sent you. Denny, Eli, and Big Bob in the Big Apple.
You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Yeah, the way you said that after Denny's commercial read is like everybody's gone after that.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at my watch here. We're up to a minute and 15 seconds because we're interrupting.
We've got 2 minutes on your car.
Well, we interrupted you a little bit. Okay. That's understandable. That's why I gave you the speed up call.
Haven't even gotten to my beloved Giants yet, the biggest story in all the NFL yesterday on Sunday.
Let's just throw away the one.
Throw the Giants away.
Let's just throw out the 67-63 UCLA over Washington State. It's funny because I watch Michigan where nobody's open. Then I watched this game with 130 points where there are receivers where you can't even see another player in the screen. Yep. They're so far open in 67-63 UCLA, which has been 0-3, maybe saved Chip Kelly's job, by the way. They were down 32 in the third quarter, put up 50 points in the second half. I guess it's exciting, although there ought to be something to say about defense that didn't exist in that game.
You know, I don't know if you noticed this, since you mentioned UCLA. USC on Friday night came up with a big game, and they beat Utah, which has a terrific football program out there. So you look at how far these two great universities have fallen with respect to football. They haven't been very good in the last number of years. If you're a college football athlete, football player, or a basketball player, and you're recruited by UCLA, ever been to Westwood and spent time there?
Yep.
Why wouldn't you go there? So I don't understand what's happened to those West Coast teams in California like that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the NFL. And I think the lead story, again, and we'll make it the lead story with our NFL because it won't be a story ever again, and that's Antonio Brown. He is done. And he says he's done with the NFL, and that's because the NFL is done with him. Let loose by three teams since the end of last year. Now he's calling for the NFL Players Association to hold the league accountable for money both teams, quote, owe him. I think, you know, I know that when the Patriots cut him, they're going to try and get out of the $9 million bonus that they offered him, or they was promised, right, certainly on some condition of what? Conduct?
Signing. Well, they owed him, from what I read, they owed him $4 million as of Monday as we taped this program. And by cutting him when they did, it was in the contract that they didn't have to pay that $4 million cash.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he'll use the Players Association to go at it. But, you know, he's an ego-crazed, angry, illiterate wide receiver. And I'm just glad to see, and I give him the league credit, to put him in the dustbin of notorious NFL dysfunctional crazies. They abuse the owners, the GMs. He's abused coaches and the team concept. His talent, no longer enough to keep his head above water. And here's why he's done, okay, in my opinion. There are other teams that would sign him. The reason he's done is that he's 31 years old, so he's in the very end of his career for a wide receiver. And what Goodell could have done was put him on this exempt list, which would have forced the Patriots to pay him until his situation is resolved.
Right.
So they let the Patriots know, or the Patriots talk to the league and say, look, you know, don't exempt him now. Let us cut him and deal with that. So now that they exempt him, now no team will sign him because you have to pay a player in the exempt list. So basically, they've blackballed Antonio Brown from the league, and that's fine with me. I think he's blown any chance any player has ever needed or deserved as a second chance, third chance, fourth chance. Done with Antonio.
You know, this is bigger than one player. This has got to do with the association, the Players Association, the NFL. This is a whole lot bigger than you guys are imagining right now. The Players Association, believe it or not, is going to get in there and defend him. They are going to be a part of this lawsuit. And he's going to get his money. He's probably going to get most of his money. Does he deserve it? Hell no, he doesn't deserve it.
Well,
but the bottom line is,
if he gets it, he deserves it. Go ahead.
If he gets whatever he gets, he's going to deserve. There's $40 million at stake. I read an article on him over the weekend that he's worth about $30 million. So even if he's worth half of that, the guy is not hurting for anything.
Right.
Number two, he doesn't pay anybody when he does have money, for God's sakes. He owes guys $150, $200, $300. He doesn't pay anybody. These text messages have buried him. The second set of text messages have not only buried him, but killed him. That's it. He's done. He brings up one great point. Roethlisberger, who was accused of numerous rapes at one time, three or four of them at one time.
That many, really?
Yes, sir. And
well, no, wait a second.
Let me finish, please, because familiar with this story.
Go ahead. All right.
And inside the rapes, he was negotiating all this time trying to settle them. He settled them for cash money. He settled every allegation,
yeah.
Roethlisberger. So my point is, one guy gets to settle, the other guy doesn't. And that's where the Players Association is going to come on strong, because they've got one guy who was allowed to continue to play despite the evidence, and the other guy is not being allowed.
That's valid. The NFL has been extremely inconsistent. See Rice, Ray, to know some of that. But anyway, and here's what Antonio said. He goes, Kraft got caught in the parlor, AB fired. Different strokes, different folks. Clearly, I don't give him credit for the double entendre.
He allegedly raped two women.
Yeah,
Kraft went to a massage parlor
exactly.
and did whatever guys do in those
exactly.
places.
Exactly. Right. There was no victim in Kraft's
What do they do in those massage parlors? I thought you just get a massage.
You do. They massage everything.
Oh.
He also mentioned...
I should try one of those. That sounds like one.
You should, Bob. We'll go together.
He mentions Sterling Sharp. I wasn't aware that Sharp, I guess, was accused of some things.
Yeah, he sure was.
He goes, crazy world, I'm done with it. So, yes, there is some double standard there. Can't argue at all.
Right. Now, you guys tell me, I want your opinion on this. Is this kind of story that I'm about to tell you, is this kind of story really a story? It's nothing but garbage.
We can't tell you until you tell it.
Yeah,
which is what you're doing it again. This is what you're doing again.
I'm doing my dramatic.
Yeah, you're doing your dramatic 2-minute lead in while we say what the hell is
going on. We'd like to hear the story.
Go ahead.
Okay, let me know you're done with the lead in and I'll listen.
Some Patriots. Well, you stopped my lead in. I had a great lead in. Damn it, you stopped me.
Go back to the lead in. That's fine.
Here's the story. Is it really a story anymore? This kind of garbage. Some Patriots fans are now menacing the writer who exposed Antonio Brown's second sexual assault accuser, telling him to, quote, watch his back in chilling messages while apparently sharing the reporter's home address on Twitter and elsewhere.
Bob,
this guy's name is Robert Klemko. He's with Sports Illustrated. He published screenshots of the racist and intimidating messages he got on his Twitter account. One creep told Klemko, I hope you die in a car accident. Another loser wrote this guy, your source is a lying. He used the C word. Your source is a lying. I hope you both die. Slow, painful deaths. It's unbelievable.
Well,
it's
that'll probably get
fans.
Him arrested by the police, won't it? I mean, anybody who's making an attempt at threatening somebody, intimidating somebody, normally they get a visit at their house with the SWAT.
Well, these are obviously extremists, but, I mean, watch an NFL. Watch a Lions game. Watch an NFL game. Look at
I'd
the guys.
Not.
Look at the guys the camera folks on with their faces painted. You got 50-year-old men wearing jerseys of 22-year-old players, screaming and yelling and drunk. This is the escape that sports is from the poor guys that are sitting there in a little cubicle during the week, getting worried about their job, getting oppressed by the boss. They get to go out on Sunday and just bitch out the other team and do whatever they want.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give you some credit here. A while back, you jumped the fence, and I thought you jumped it way too early. But you're right. The players are trying to take over the NFL like they did the NBA. This is going on all over the league. You got the guy in Ramsey?
Ramsey, yeah.
Ramsey's now all of a sudden got the players.
See the Jags, Jalen Ramsey? Jaguars, right?
Jaguars, yeah. And he called in this morning, and he's got the flu, and he's not going to practice until he gets better. They're now sending out a complete medical team to his home and bringing him medicine and anything else he may need to get over the flu.
Yep,
so you're right about it. The players are attempting in their own way to take over whatever world that they're living in.
I just think it's leverage. And
sure it is.
And when you make a ton of money, it gives you more leverage. That's
it gives
why,
you a bigger set of you-know-what.
That's why in the NBA, which is where it's really been most pronounced, the players make so much money and five, six, seven times what the coach makes, and they rule the roost. Okay, so how about some other NFL here? You want to talk about Eli Manning?
Because we do work with an old timer on this program. I always like to get Danny's comments on certain other old timers. Did you notice that late last week in Tampa, Hoppy Cassidy died?
Yes.
He was 85.
Yeah, yeah.
Won the Heisman Trophy and the Maxwell at Ohio State in 1955.
He was
like so many other Ohio State athletes, he had to come to that hated state up north to make a living. On the Lions World Championship team in 57, he was a great baseball man too. Went back to Columbus, was the first base coach for the Yankees' top farm club there for years. Danny, I'm sure you knew Hoppy. What was he like?
Well, I actually knew Roy Rogers. I didn't know Hopalong Cassidy.
The old comedy. You never knew Hoppy Cassidy?
Wasn't Hoppy athletic director at University of Wisconsin, maybe?
No, that was Crazy Legs Hirsch. Yeah.
That was Crazy Legs Hirsch.
Hopalong Crazy
Legs. Well, I'll tell
okay.
you.
It's okay.
Crazy Legs Hirsch was a great guy.
Okay.
Just a terrific guy. No, I knew Crazy Legs. Somehow, some way, he and I wound up on the same plane a number of times in Chicago, switching planes. We were always going to the same card shows at one time.
Cassidy, like you said, Heisman Trophy winner, and he played here from 50, he won it in 55, played here from 56 to 62. He only ran for a total of 1,229 yards in his career.
Man. It was not a great NFL running back.
No, he wasn't. And back then, you know, like the leading rusher on it, like the Lions would be 650 yards, Mel Farr or something. So for some reason, I think they had
nine
more
games they played, or 10 or 11.
And they also used more running backs back then. Now usually team features one back because it's a passing game. They have three, four, five running backs.
But he had a great name, Hopalong Cassidy.
Sure did. Yeah, anyway.
That's what they called him. All right, I struck out with that one. So, Denny, how about the FL's win at Philly, which certainly surprised a lot of us on Sunday? What did you think?
Listen, I watched the whole ball game. I was surprised they won. I didn't think they would win the ball game, especially being away from Detroit. But you know what? They proved me wrong once again, and I got lucky. They wouldn't let me make a bet.
to their credit, they are 2-0-1.
Yep.
But they could have easily lost. And I'm just saying, this is the NFL. If things are close, the game's turned on one or two plays. I'm not detracting from the fact they're 2-0-1. You are what your record says you are. However, the kid in Arizona intercepts the ridiculous pass Stafford threw at the end. They lose that game. And hit this play. Listen, this play that we're going to play is the blocked field goal that stole Philadelphia's chance to win this game.
Once all year, it's snapped. Robin Hood, and it's blocked. Malcolm Jenkins with the football is inside the 30, inside the 25-yard line. It looked like it was Douglas who picked it up, and Malcolm Jenkins was the one who blocked it.
So what you see is Malcolm Jenkins. Blocks the kick. And if you look at the replay, and I believe one of the announcers said this later, he goes to block on the play 15 yards away from where the guy who picked the ball up is returning it. A Lion defender turns his back to him, and Jenkins doesn't even touch him or barely touches him. It's a ridiculous, ridiculous call. No need for it because the guy that he touched still went on to pursue unabated or undeterred the ball carrier. And so they would have been inside the 20. They would have kicked the field goal at the very minimum and sent it to overtime. So not taking away a win, but they could just as easily be 1-2 as 2-0-1. But they're excited, as Matt Patricia showed after the game.
We just keep going, baby. We just keep going. Man, so fucking proud of you right there. Yeah. We don't stop. I love it. Love every single one of you.
You know, and one other thing about our quarterback, which they make an awful lot about almost every ball game, especially when we're behind and we're coming up again, because most of the time we play from behind. He threw some passes yesterday that were just not the kind of passes you want, especially when there's 3 and 4 guys. And I hope everybody remembers the one pass he threw. I think it was late in the second quarter, and he threw it into a crowd of there were 6 guys with the wrong uniform on, and that's just not a sign. I still really believe he gags it once in a while when he starts dropping down sidearm.
I just think it's the NFL.
Maybe.
I mean, look at Carson Wentz. Guys are dropping balls. He made some missed wide open receivers in the end zone. Another receiver drops a touchdown pass. Goddard. It's the NFL.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. And Philadelphia, you know, fumbles twice to end the half.
But you certainly do a lot of defending of him.
Who?
You.
Stafford? I think Stafford's good. And I think just like Shea Patterson, it goes beyond. It goes beyond Matt Stafford.
Well, you got to take us to the promised land once in a while. He's been here a long time.
You guys can talk about, as Denny puts it, your quarterback as much as you want. I want to talk about my quarterback. Daniel Jones. Did you see this
resume
and that amazing Giants win?
What?
Daniel Jones, the rookie out of Duke, had a passer rating, quarterback rating, of a perfect 158.3, picked up right from the preseason. This guy is going to be the next great star in New York and the next star quarterback in the NFL. This kid's amazing. He really is.
And they were criticized for taking him too soon.
Yeah.
By the way, his 2 passing and 2 running touchdowns in the 32-31 Giant win over Tampa, he's the second player since the 1970 merger to record 2 rushing touchdowns and 2 passing touchdowns. Who's the other? The answer is
Manning.
Eric Hipple,
one of our guys.
Only he and Daniel Jones are the only two to rush for 2 touchdowns and pass for 2 in the same game.
You remember that Monday night game that Hipple had in Detroit in the 80s? I was there at the Silverdome for that.
In fact,
he was unbelievable.
My license plate is EBN 48-17. So I remember EBN 48-17 was a score when they beat Chicago and Hipple made his debut 48-17 on Monday Night Football.
He could definitely play. There's no question about that.
He wasn't able
to sustain it. Everybody knows Eric has had a lot of drinking problems over the years. I hope he's recovering.
Well, totally.
I hope he's okay now because I always liked him.
Eric Hipple, he's become an advocate for mental health research, suicide prevention. His young son
committed
suicide, and Eric has done amazing work, and he works through U of M, as a matter of fact. I remember, I don't get too much to Hipple, but this is just my era, and he was drafted in 1981 from Utah State. And I just remember, you know, it's like you mentioned Jack Morris when you went over to Tiger Town and just interviewed any rookie that happened to be there, and it's Jack.
Right.
And Hipple comes into town. This is a really nice kid. I hope he makes it. He's a 4th-round pick, and he's still around town. Good to see.
He still lives here?
Yeah.
Eric's never left Detroit. You know, we have a lot of people like Denny McClain, like Eric Hipple, like guys who are not from Detroit, but they come to Detroit because they have to. And they have their professional sports careers in Detroit. And when they're done, they stay in Detroit because it's a great place to raise a family, wonderful people. It's called the biggest small town in America.
No doubt about
it. For a reason. And, you know, it's just very flattering because Detroit is ripped nationally all the time by people. Ever been there?
Yeah.
Most of them.
As you know, I grew up in New York, and I came here and I go, God, people are so nice.
Yeah.
They listen to you.
Yeah.
They say nice things. They're polite. I just felt it's so much easier to succeed here because everybody isn't against – in New York, they're all against you. Nobody pays attention to you. They assume you're going to fail.
And the other thing is and as much traveling as I do, I get it all the time about, hey, you got your gun on you? When you go and come, can you wear your gun? Can you walk into a restaurant with your gun? I mean, people just have this bizarre feeling that we're all walking around.
It's hard to overcome a reputation.
It is.
Meanwhile, so as I told you, I am now ahead with my bookie by $60. years. No kidding. I'm 5-4. I've had to pay the VIG on four losses after I won Michigan. I won the Lions yesterday, and I lost Michigan State. And at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down,
what are we
take
doing
some
tonight?
Time off, watch some football. We're going to watch Monday Night Football tonight.
But what are we doing? What game?
I didn't even know who's playing tonight.
Chicago.
Are you kidding me? It's Denny's beloved Bears against the Redskins. Ooh, Denny's excited about that.
Yes, he is.
Anyway, there's nothing like else like the NFL. No better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. Do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts, better lines than any other sports book. It's where I play. First place I've ever played, and I like it, and where you should too. Wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. I assume they are. I haven't bet with anybody else, but they're good. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with my bookie. If you're trying to want a little lot, bet a little, win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. Join now. My bookie will double your first deposit, but use the promo code FILTER. Filter to activate the offer. That's how we will keep them as a sponsor. If enough of you will do your betting through them, that's the promo code FILTER. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Management. Hey, most people just don't spend enough time to figure out where they're going in their life with their financial situation. He'll answer all your financial questions with a complimentary consultation. Create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. Retirement fast approaching, maybe? Very hard to do it alone. Let Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Management help you out. If you're younger, beware. Life happens. You need to be prepared for all future obligations and contingencies, your kids, their college education, etc. We stand by Luke. Again, call him at 248-663-4748, 248-663-4748. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, blah, 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 blah. Marketing names, products, and services referenced here independent of Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. That's for you.
Now, it's not time, Eli, to get to the mailbag yet, but playing off Luke Nowacki and playing off your MyBookie thing, I'm going to kill two birds with the proverbial one stone with a note I did get on Twitter from Luke Nowacki.
Oh.
Hey, Bob, I took a quick trip to Vegas for the weekend. I have a sports rule question. I took Seattle -7 for the second half. The penalty at the end left an untimed down that Seattle scored on for the second half, but the extra point attempt was not made. This left the second half score at 20-13 Seattle, so my bet pushed. Why didn't they have to attempt the extra point? Luke, you're asking me about gambling? He's bet on the second half of a game. You got a response to that?
Well, okay, so I didn't see the end of the game. So they didn't – they did the – did it win the game for them in the final play? Is that what happened?
What he's saying is not, it's irrelevant whether the game was won or lost. He's got Seattle.
But why didn't they kick the field
just for the second half of the game?
That's all you can bet. You can bet game long.
Halves of games.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you can bet plays. You can bet where the next play is a pass or a run. You can make 100 bets in a game. But the question is, did the touchdown end the game? Is that why they didn't kick the extra? Why didn't they go for the extra point?
He's wondering why. I guess that was the end of the game. Yeah,
because they didn't need to. It's a
that was the play I was telling you about.
I see, but yeah, they only get the six. That's all they need. That's why gambling is tough. I'm stunned that I'm ahead.
I know, man.
Anyway,
that's why I don't.
Well, you brought up Daniel Jones legitimately enough, 23 of 36, and replacing Eli Manning. Also, Teddy Bridgewater filled in for Drew Brees. So the backups had a pretty good day. They beat Seattle 33-27. And Wayne Newton, pardon me, Cam Newton, out with a bad ankle. Kyle Allen fills in for him, and they beat the Arizona 38-20. So six backup quarterbacks at the play last week.
Isn't it unbelievable?
No, how many? That,
wait a minute.
Yeah, I think it was seven or eight.
Was it? Okay.
Isn't it unbelievable how many brand new quarterbacks we've got playing in the NFL all of a sudden?
Yeah, so, you know, we talk about, I just talking to graving about, because he deserves it, Daniel Jones. Who's to say that when they play the Redskins next Sunday, he doesn't get hurt and he's out for the season and maybe he's never the same guy? Saquon Barkley, high ankle sprain in that Giants win at Tampa, which at least quieted Richard Vitale of nearby Bradenton, Florida, a little bit. So anyway, I think Saquon's probably going to be out 6 weeks. That's typical. Yep. You just don't know anymore.
A couple of quarterbacks, you had mentioned last week about Kirk Cousins' struggles. You kind of outlined those, and he had a good game for the Vikings yesterday, So that was good for Cousins to come back. But here, so last night, I couldn't stay up for the end, but I watched some of the Rams and the Browns. That was very interesting because Cleveland's a fascinating story.
It is.
They were 7-8-1 last year. They won 5 of their last 7. And Baker Mayfield, you got to like Baker Mayfield. I'm almost thinking he's a modern-day Joe Namath in a way. Not that he has the flair and not that he, you know, wears the fur coats and all that, but just a young guy willing to speak his mind, willing to guarantee a victory, willing to
better
say what's
on. Better back it up.
Well, whatever. I give him a lot of credit for that. He's more like a cowboy than Joe Namath, who was like a big city type of guy, Broadway Joe. But I like his moxie and all that. But again, Cleveland, now they're 1-2. And a lot of people, the smart bettors like James Hoxholder, was that his name?
Right.
The Jeopardy guy said, be careful. It's all hype. And it may work. We wind up to be all hype. They're 1-2, better than they were. Odell Beckham's a great player. They got Jarvis Landry. They got some great players. But Baker Mayfield.
Again, this is like the situation in Detroit. The clowns are the clowns. They are who they are, and they're going to be the clowns no matter what happens. The FLs are the FLs. I'm hearing all this stuff from people. Kansas City's coming in next weekend. We're going to kill the Chiefs. What? Oh, I can't wait. Come on,
please.
People, please.
So what do you think? What do you think? Detroit's going to be favored?
No. Kansas City's got to be an 8-point favorite, don't
Absolutely.
You think?
I don't follow stuff like that. But I'm just saying, I don't think they're beating the Chiefs at home. But if they do, then a lot of these, like Brandon, like our producer Brandon McAfee sitting right there, he's licking his chops. Oh, boy, Kansas, we're going to beat Kansas City. Even if you do, Brandon, they're going to kill you at some point. The FLs are going to rip your heart out of your chest, throw it on the ground, and stomp them, as they always do.
Come on, Danny. You gotta like the anti-passion. Listen,
Mayfield. Let's talk about Mayfield for a second.
I haven't heard anybody believe that the Lions are going to beat or destroy Kansas City.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Where'd that come from?
One of our biggest fans out there, Freddie the Pizza Man. He's tweeting today. I guarantee you we're going to beat Kansas City. Freddie, how old are you? What's the matter with you?
This is the same mentality that tells people to go kill the Sports Illustrated guy. Wrote a bad article.
Same people.
That's why they call them
it's
fanatics.
Not same.
It's That's why they call them fanatics.
Listen, okay? The one thing that they've got this quarterback who looks like the next coming of Bobby Lane in his prime. This kid can play.
Amazing. Yeah.
He's an amazing kid. And as far as Mayfield goes, I never trust a quarterback who's got to run to be good. And Mayfield has to run for that club to win. And one sooner or later, you know what's going to happen? He's going to run into a truck out there at about 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And goodbye.
Again,
see you later.
Is he short? How tall is Mayfield?
5'10".
That's all? Then he's taller than Kyler Murray. Now, Mahomes is no shrimp, is he? Mahomes isn't short.
6'1".
6'3".
Is he 6'3"? But you know, the thing about...
Who is? Oh, Mahomes. How big is Mayfield? He's like 5'10", 5'10".
Yeah, I think that's what they list him at. Well, I'll tell you this. Daniel Jones is 6'4", and one of the big reasons the Giants won that game at Tampa, of course, the kid choked on a field goal for Tampa at the final gun
right,
and won it.
Right.
But Jones beat him with his feet, and Denny's totally right about this. Daniel Jones runs a lot. How much longer is he going to be able to do that until somebody takes his knee out?
And that scramble touchdown of his was beautiful. Eli Manning would not have been able to do that.
No.
We could do some mailbag now, or we could do baseball.
Well, you want to do Denny's baseball? Because he's been chomping at the bit to say something about
baseball.
The Tigers.
I haven't been chomping at any bit.
In fact, let's talk about them, and then we'll do mailbag, okay?
What are we doing?
Well, we got a break for radio in 3 minutes.
What can we
do for 2.5 minutes till we got to say goodbye to radio people?
I'll tell you what we can do right now, because Eli, this has been on your mind for some time now. One of the guys wrote into mailbag. And let's see, where do
Well,
I
while you're looking for it, I'll say 760-89 balls.
No, you wrote 760-89 balls.
And ask nofilter at gmail.com.
Right.
Okay.
So anyway, I don't think he left his name. He says, hey, guys, I'm a big fan of radio, and I wanted to actually tune in to 1130 to listen to you guys through my staticky AM.
DFN.
But their website is terrible, man. It's all just sports stories. I couldn't even find the personalities or showtimes. So, I mean, I don't know. Eli, you could just say when your show is available more than you do and at what time on the fan. because I really have no bleeping clue.
Yeah, we are. I should have said that we are on at between 8 and 9 on Tuesday and Friday. This show replayed between 8 and 9. And besides Sean Belizean in the morning.
We're on the radio in Toledo. The sports station down there went from 6 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, 6 to 7, which is drive time. That's okay. But the reason there's no personalities is because there are no personalities. Sean does a morning show, and it's all network stuff after that on DFN. But
the world has changed forever.
I want to get in it. In fact, let me do this before we say goodbye to our radio people. Nick Castellanos has 58 doubles.
Unbelievable.
Okay, 58 doubles. Do you realize that in baseball history, only 6 times has anyone gotten 60 doubles in a season? It's a lot more rare than 60 home runs. In fact, nobody has done it since 1936. The last to do it was Charlie Gehringer and Joe Medwick to get 60 doubles in a season. So Nick Castellanos is having a hell of a year.
He's been on fire since he got to Chicago. He's been unbelievable.
We didn't need him. We don't want him. We didn't need Martinez. We didn't need JV anymore. It's prospects, fellas.
Yeah.
That's what it's – and if you don't believe me, just go ask Al Avila, okay?
And I think JV won his 20th last night, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, Sunday he did.
Anyway, we've got to say goodbye to our radio listeners. We've got a lot more to do here, though, for you podcasters. So – you radio people, check out the podcast, hear the rest of the show, and you can do it at NoFilterSportsPodcast.com. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, let me give you an upset.
Go ahead.
The guy on the Houston club against JV, I can't think of his name right now, but the other guy that's got 18 or 19 wins.
You mean Garrett Cole?
Garrett Cole.
Well, that's
guess
who you're talking about.
Guess what?
What?
Watch him win the Cy Young. JV won't. Watch.
You don't think so?
Why
would you say that?
Well, JV, Cole is a real good pitcher. I'm talking in the true definition of the word pitcher. JV's got this overpowering stuff. I've talked about this before. And he can throw – when he's got his good stuff, like in the no-hitter a couple of weeks ago, he was just overpowering for 9 innings. Cole isn't that kind of pitcher. He throws well. He throws hard. One thing he's got that pinpoint control that's unbelievable. He's on the black all the time. Yep. So that's what I'm thinking is that because he has never won one, and he became a real star this year, and of course I think he was before. But
it's a tough call.
No.
Yeah, big time.
I think you're right in terms of – I'm not going to disagree with any of that, but I just think the other side of that – is Verlander is so popular, has had so much national recognition that I think he becomes the favorite. Plus, he's won 20 games.
He also leads in every category except for strikeouts, but every other category. And he had the no-hitter. The no-hitter does account.
And he leads the league.
Let's not
it's
forget,
amazing.
Fellas.
It's amazing how strikeouts influence voters. Watch.
Yeah. Well,
let's not forget. And Danny McLean won 2 of these Cy Youngs, sharing one. Danny's favorite Cy Young winner of all time. I'm watching the Mets game the other night. They're talking about Jacob DeGrom, who won. Going into Friday night's game, Jacob DeGrom had 9 starts of at least 7 innings in which he gave up 0 runs. And he had 0 wins to show for it.
Yeah.
That's why he won the Cy Young last year.
And 10-9
he's added it this year.
You know, 1 year I had 9 shutouts. What does that say?
It's a lot of shutouts.
It's
a lot of shutouts, right? It's a lot of shutouts.
It's also a different day and age.
And you don't normally get beat when you shut somebody out.
By the way, I got to ask you guys this as baseball veterans. So I'm watching this game. It's at Cincinnati, right? And the Reds come out wearing, are you ready for this? The Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah.
Green uniforms. They were green. And the Reds had caps that were like these green hunting camouflage war caps. They're Cincinnati Reds in green uniforms. Is there no shame anymore?
No shame.
I want to play you a kind of an amazing soundbite from a Tiger game the other night regarding Miguel Cabrera, and also talk about the Cubs collapse, another great collapse. But first, before we do that, I got to say, how is eye surgery like No Filter Podcast? Well, it's because it's convenient to listen to us whenever you want to. Lifestyle, listen whenever you want to at your leisure. Just like you can get precision vision 24/7 without having to first reach for your glasses or stuff those contacts in, that's inconvenience. And getting LASIK from Dr. Yalda, who has done more than anybody in Michigan, over 30,000, will give you convenience and lifestyle because you never have to worry about those artificial, poorly performing old technologies like glasses, reading glasses, and contacts. There's a lot of noise out there about low-price LASIK, but then you go there, you find out what the real price is. Dr. Yaldo promises he will beat any LASIK offer you get. It is a life-changing surgery. For those 45-plus with reading issues, listener Dave wrote in, I went for my one-year checkup. After getting the multifocal implants, I got 20/15 vision in both near and far, better than perfect. You hate your reading glasses? Go see Dr. Yaldo. He'll tell you how you can see perfectly up close and never have to use those reading glasses again. Get the best, pay the least. The evaluation is free. Call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Well, when my 1969 Mets won the pennant, the Cubs were 8.5 games back.
What
no
are you
deal.
Laughing at?
Nothing. I'll tell you later.
They're 8.5 back, and they came back. But that wasn't the biggest collapse, the Cubs.
Right.
The biggest collapse that I remember was when I was 14 years old in 1964 when the Cardinals lost, was it the last six or seven games of the season?
I thought that was Philadelphia.
Oh, Philly. No, because Philly lost. The Cardinals snuck in and played the Yankees in the World Series.
Yeah.
And
how old am I? And I remember that, and you don't?
No, I do remember.
Excuse me.
The Phillies.
Under
the
Gene Mauch and Jim Bunning.
Gene Mauch, that's right. They were trying to pitch Jim Bunning every day.
Yeah. One of the nastiest guys, Gene Mauch.
He was a dick.
He is a total dick. When he managed the Angels, and I tried to interview him.
Wait a minute.
I'm a little radio guy just trying to be nice. Give me 5 minutes before the game. Treat me like
his name was not Dick. Mr. Mauch.
Right. Yeah. It might as well have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Gene Mauch. Anyway, so the 64 Phils, and then the famous, the gerbil, Don
Gerbil?
Don Zimmer? Don Zimmer, when the Red Sox lost like 12
I'll help you as we go along here.
At the end of the year, and they lost the playoff when Bucky did at the horn. So what did the Cubs do? They've lost their last six and the last five by one run.
They're done.
It's amazing. They lost, you know, the championship is gone forever. That was just 20-16. Some players will remain, but Madden's probably going to go. Historic. They became the second team in 100 years to get swept at home in a four-game series, lose all four by a single run. They also became the first major league team since 2011 to lose five straight one-run games. First time it's happened to the franchise since 1915. So
you kind of implied that Joe was going to lose his job, and I agree with you because he makes a statement. He was kind of reviewing his time in Chicago, and he was saying in a poetic manner how much he has enjoyed his time in Chicago.
So you think that guy can manage or not?
No, I do
not. Is a good manager?
I think he sucks. I think he's one of the worst managers I've ever seen.
Why?
Go back to you remember when they won the World Series a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Sure. In the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning, they should have lost that ball game. If you remember what happens, the guys got on base and he got out of an inning with a double play one time. Something happened on another unbelievable play with the bases loaded, and the intentional walk was killing him. That's what he kept doing. He kept intentionally walking people. He should have lost it. I just thought it was one of the worst manager jobs. And lo and behold, then he wins the sixth game, and then he wins the seventh game.
Yeah.
I almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, Danny, that's one game. That's one game.
No, it was three games.
This guy's a hell of a manager.
Well,
you're wrong.
And
he's proven it at Tampa, and he's proven it now in Chicago with the Cubs.
Give me the players. I'll manage the same club he had, and I'll win more games.
I think he's good at creating a sense of camaraderie.
Yes.
And he's a friendly guy, and he's a player's coach.
Terrific
guy. I like
guy.
Him and all that. But anyway.
So anyway,
I thought it was awful.
Collapse.
One second. I thought it was awful what he did to Tampa Bay. He decides he's going to retire and go fishing for the rest of his life. 2 days later, he signs a contract with the Cubs.
Well, that happened.
That
a
was
lot.
Terrible. No, that's a lousy thing.
Anyway,
to do.
Let's talk. So,
wait.
Ahead,
don't interrupt me here.
Okay.
I want to make this point. I got a question for you two guys.
Okay.
So, Eli's talking about the Cubs collapse. But if you look at the standings on Monday, as again we record this program, all four wild card spots in both leagues are really up for grabs.
Yep.
Is it fair to have a one-game playoff for the wild card winners to get into the real playoffs?
Ridiculous.
Baseball's 162.
Ridiculous.
Didn't you mention the other day that the Bobby Thompson thing was a three-game playoff?
It was a three-game playoff.
That makes sense. No, the one game is ridiculous. And didn't the Tigers lose one? They lost to Minnesota?
Yep.
I forget what year it was.
Yep.
It's ridiculous, a one-game playoff.
Yeah, you played 162 games, and now you got to decide it in 24 hours.
I guess the justification is they let one more wild card team in so they can that so that you reduces it from five to four teams right. in the playoffs.
Well, you keep interest if your club's got a chance to get in. It maintains interest among fans.
But let's say you're two or three games behind the wild card to the team that gets it, and then they you beat them in the one game playoff. That sucks.
It really does.
If a team beats you 162 games, you shouldn't have a one game chance like a reprieve to beat them. No, to answer your question. It's BS.
You know what else sucks, fellas? The Miami Marlins suck, and news reports over the weekend say that Derek Jeter, mainly responsible for this disaster, is now actually begging fans to come out to see his slapstick laughingstock team.
Hang on a minute.
Miami ranks last in attendance in baseball. They're averaging about 5,000 fewer fans than the next team, Tampa. They've been a mess since Jeter and this owner named Bruce Sherman took over. They sold off core pieces such as defending MVPs Giancarlo Stanton and Christian Yelich in order to clear salary and then failing to make the playoffs in that time. Fellas, does that sound familiar to
Hang
you?
Hang on a minute.
Have you ever heard a story like that? Yeah.
Hang on a minute. First of all, they're 9,700 fans short every ball game, not 5,000. They're up to 9,700 short every game, less than what they had last year. Number two, they said over the weekend that they are very pleased where the organization is today for next year. So, it's kind of a conflict, what you just said. But you know what? We don't know. We don't know what's coming through the barnyard next year. So maybe they've got something that we don't know. And boy, maybe, am I pulling for him.
Maybe they got Jamer Candelario coming up.
You never know. But I'm telling you, they've got a better organization than what we think. And we'll just wait to have to see next year.
You have to wait for the prospects. And fairness. So here, let's talk about somebody who's not a prospect.
By the way, they got the fourth highest minor league system. Miami does right now, well ahead of the Tigers in terms of the kids they have down there who might be coming up. You're right.
Right.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you, because I was watching the
Tigers. By the way, one second. He emphatically stated it, that they are in a good position for next year. So get ready.
Okay. Yeah, get ready. Okay. Get ready for this soundbite, okay? So
I'm watching
the Tigers Friday night. They're on the national. And, you know, with all due respect to our local broadcasters, if you want to get a more unbiased opinion from an expert, you got to listen to the national feed. That's why I always listen to the national feed over a local feed. Sure. So A.J. Pierzynski, a former major league catcher, obviously does his research. When Miguel Cabrera came up in the first inning on Friday night, here is what Pierzynski said about Cabrera's performance this year.
Well, 2016, there's been some injuries after that in 17, 18, but he's been healthy mostly this year. It's amazing how quick it dropped off. Usually you see a guy this good and surefire Hall of Famer, they usually decline a little bit slower, but he's rapidly declining. I think that's what's most eye-opening for Tigers and their fans and their organization is this is a guy they were counting on for a long time, and to see him drop off, especially the power, like he's still getting his hits, he's still hitting 280, but only 10 home runs in a year when every team is setting home run records just about.
Fair or unfair? I got to assume that Pierzynski knows that he's been hurt. I got to assume that he knows the history. He's not going to just look at stats and fly off the hook. Are we being overly protective of Miguel Cabrera, or is it the injuries that have caused him to decline so severely, or has he just in some way just gotten old really, really fast?
You know, I forgot to remind everybody. I was at the ball game Friday night. That's not what I'm going to remind you of. But I'm going to tell you the thing that really peeved me. I mean, peeved me three times.
More than the $594?
More than the $594. I'm sorry. This fat-ass first baseman jogged all the way down to first base. One time, he never even got there.
He's a DH, by the way.
Whatever the hell he is, he should not be playing baseball right now. You put him on the bench. He's not any good for the ball club. It's demoralizing. He doesn't hustle. Everybody else is hustling their asses off. I mean, they're running, and they all realize they're fighting for a job right now. He doesn't have to worry about getting his, well, how much has he got left?
4 years of $30 million a year.
So $120 million. He doesn't have to worry about it. But the bottom line is, man, this guy is just
So you're saying he's dogging it.
He's dogging it. It's 110% dogging it. It's awful.
I want to say this. Ralph Kiner, when he used to do the Mets game, the late, great Ralph Kiner, said that Mike Piazza was the greatest right-handed hitter that baseball had ever seen since Joe DiMaggio.
Oh,
well, I'll tell you something. I saw Piazza, and Miguel Cabrera is a much better hitter than Piazza. I don't want to second guess. So when the Tigers gave Miggy all of this money, so many millions guaranteed, my belief is they probably had to keep him in Detroit. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything at the time, and I'm not going to say anything now.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with you. They had to pay him. I mean, he was probably the best hitter in baseball for a number of years.
Al Kaline says he's the greatest hitter he's ever seen in his life. Well, greatest hitter I ever saw.
I think Al has a tendency to build up a program that's not quite where – Al likes to make sure his club is being applauded. That's Al. That's his job.
Well, I think he quite honestly said that Cabrera, and I take Al Kaline knows better than me.
Absolutely.
Greatest right-handed hitter he ever saw. So, I mean –
No, Kaline said Cabrera was the greatest hitter he ever saw. Hitter.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's certainly not the best runner I ever saw.
All right, we got to get to the mailbag here.
Real fast, I just want to say about the Tigers. They improved to 22-56 at Comerica yesterday by beating the White Sox 6-3. By the way, and I'm not knocking Matt Boy, but he said this is a great team win. We hit the ball. We made some great defense.
I heard it too.
I mean, please.
I wanted to throw up.
The 40-man roster up here. Anyway, they're making certain they won't become the first major league team to lose 60 home games. They need to win one of their final three home games to avoid tying the 1939 St. Louis Browns record of 59 home losses. It's
ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway, the Tigers were shut out by the Indians on Thursday, the 14th time they were shut out this season, six times against the Indians, who on the season were 17-1. No, actually, was it 18-1?
They never lost a game to the Tigers. They won 17 straight. Or maybe they lost
early in the season. That's 18-1. Yeah. It's almost impossible where the spread between the best winning and the worst winning percentage is not as large as the other leagues. It's the nature of baseball, and it is pretty remarkable. And we're going to talk to Lance on Thursday.
Hey,
right? Kim,
you want to do the mailbag or not?
Yeah, let's go.
Before I forget, Brandon, help me with this. We're inviting sponsors to join our show. If you hear our sponsors here, and we hope you support them all, Dr. Yaldo, Luke Nowacki, we hope you bet with my bookie. We hope you buy your Lincoln at Star Lincoln. And we hope you get your refi from David Hall like I did. I saved a bunch of money with that. And if you want to sponsor us, if you own a business, go to nofiltersportspodcast.com. There's a contact button. What happens next, Brandon?
Just click the contact button.
That's all you do. Click the contact
That's all
button.
There is.
Okay, and let us know what you want to do. Now, back to the mailbag, Bob. Go ahead.
I'm going to begin today's mailbag with a question for Dennis Dale McClain. Dennis, what Detroit Red Wing in history had the nickname Fatty?
I don't know,
Bob.
I don't know.
Bob Probert. Here's why I mention that. It's another amazing picture from the great Iffy the Dopester. Where this guy gets this stuff, I don't know. So the other day, Iffy the Dopester tweeted out an old picture of you with Fatty. And that, of course, would be the great Alex Delvecchio. Now, this was taken in Port Huron, Michigan, likely in the early 70s, the two of you guys together, to announce that you, Denny McClain would be hosting a new hockey show on Channel 9.
What?
Did that ever happen?
Did you host a hockey show?
I think so. I think it happened on Channel – I don't think it was Channel –
Did you do a TV with Jim Price, too, at one point?
I did a thing with Jim Price.
But we're talking a hockey show here.
We did a show. You're right. We did a show like that. Gosh darn, I forgot all about it.
You could say to Denny, listen, we want to do a new show on nuclear physics. What do you know? He'd say, I'm an expert. Sign me up. I'm in.
The thing – that was the show that Jim Price played my Ed McMahon for me. That's what it was. He was Ed McMahon on the show.
Did you, Karnak?
And let me tell you what happened. Like the second or third show, we had who's a football player? God.
Oh, my God.
With the Lions.
Joe Schmidt?
No. The actor.
Alex Karras.
Alex Karras was our third or fourth guest on the show. And we wanted Alex – we had a Western theme of some kind, and we wanted Alex to ride in on a horse, okay, into the building.
After Blazing Saddles.
After Blazing Saddles, right. So bottom line is we get the horse all ready to go for him. We got a horse. Well, there was a horse coming to the show anyway.
Okay.
And the horse had nothing else to do. He had a free lunch.
Or just a horse's ass.
So what happened was, wait a second, this is good. And lo and behold, Alex says, I'm not getting on the horse. I said, Alex, come on now. It's a nice horse. That horse. I said, I know horses, Alex, and that horse isn't going to hurt you. Look it. I said, that horse is older than all of us put together.
Of course, you don't know horses, but you said you did.
He says, I'm not getting on the horse. I said, all right, so put the garbage on me. So they put the garbage on me. Now, as I go through the garage door to come into the building with all these cameras rolling, right? And God, we get to, it was crazy. I don't see the top of the door.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And I walked right into that door, knocked me off the horse. And what do you think the horse did at exactly when I was falling off the bed? He took a poop. And I wound up on that poop on my head, and I thought I was dead.
Well, I saw you in a lot of embarrassing situations. Oh,
I know the one thing the horse didn't do, knock some sense into Denny McClain. I can guarantee you that.
Well,
much.
I can tell you this. Denny McClain never got on that horse again.
Yeah, now listener Robert Coyle responded to this on Twitter.
Look at this picture.
And he says, could it have been because there also was an organ in the studio from the Bozo show on CKLW, and that's why you did this hockey show? They could maximize Denny's skill set. You could do the hockey show, be on the air, and play the organ in the Bozo studio.
You forget all of this, don't you?
You're such a horse's ass.
That's right.
There's a picture of you and Alex, though.
Look at my hair.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You're already fat. You've only been out of the game for a year. How long did it take you to gain 100 pounds? Like 3 weeks, 4 weeks after the season?
72 hours.
That's it. So what else you got,
Bob? I don't know if you knew this about our partner. And Brandon, since you're really into this, I don't know if you knew this about Eli Zara. But he's branched out. Eli has another thing he's got going on now. Jimmy Humes writes from Stuart, Florida. Eli was right, and I took his advice. I grabbed Dak Prescott during a quarterback run in my fantasy draft. He's working out as the best QB so far, thanks, but still not worth $30 million. So are you now giving advice for these people who play fantasy football, what players to take?
I'm sorry I don't remember saying that, but perhaps I did. I said he was a good quarterback. I've never made any fantasy suggestions, by the way. I don't play fantasy football.
Hey, does Mr. Kitchens, the coach
Freddie,
for the
Freddie
Cleveland,
Kitchens, yeah.
Does he look like the guy who's got all the watches on his left arm?
He looks like Larry the Cable Guy.
He really does.
Yeah.
Here's another comment here, fellas. Question for you guys again. It comes from Rick Ben.
Hey, Rick.
Love the show, guys. Usually like and share all your stuff on Facebook, too, Eli. And I have interacted with you on Facebook as Jill and Rick Ben. So apparently he knows you, Eli. Mm-hmm. So he says, I would love you guys to interview Kari Willis. Ooh. He's an outstanding young man from my local community. With all the negative press of troubled athletes, he is a breath of fresh air, an outstanding
air,
guy.
Yes.
So the question I have for you guys, who is Kari Willis?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, he's a breath of fresh air.
He's a fresh breath air.
He's fresh
air. I'm not
air.
Gay. Stop it.
Stop
I just live sometimes. Kari Willis was a great safety at Michigan State the last 3 or 4 years. Are you kidding me?
Really?
You know who Kari Willis is?
I don't think he knew that.
No,
either,
no.
There's no way he knew that.
I see every Michigan State game. I think I might know who Kari Willis is, for goodness sake. Unbelievable. You guys are amazing. All right. What else we got here? We're running out of time. Oh,
yeah,
guys.
You're out of time. Been out of time a long time ago. Go ahead. This is your last one.
At our age, all three of us are running out of time.
By the way, at this stage of the last show.
Can I tell you one quick story about Don Zimmer?
Oh, my God. Okay, go ahead.
Popeye.
All right, listen. Popeye. They call him Popeye all the time. Yep. And this is my second major league game that I ever pitched in my life. And he was with the Washington Senators at the time. And he was like a 1-2 hitter, right? Yeah. 102, 120, whatever.
Right.
He was a dead low ball hitter. Somebody said he's a dead low ball hitter. Whatever you do, don't pitch him down. So I get him 0-2, and I threw him a ball that was literally on his toenails, right? Didn't mean to throw it there, but you're 19 years old. You're going to make some mistakes. And he hit it in the center field bleachers.
Really?
Don Zimmer, Popeye.
A little punch hitting infielder.
God, he just got it, you know, like a golf swing. It was
a guy who, as a kid with the Brooklyn Dodgers, was beaned, and they put a steel plate in his head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he played his entire career in baseball with that steel plate in his head. And,
tough,
of course, I think the younger people know he went on to manage and coach. Yeah. Great guy.
And Bill Lee, one of his pitchers in 78
the
when they collapsed, called him the Gerbil, and it was a pretty good nickname.
Yep.
But anyway, just as I said to the last show, it was winding down to the end, and Bob is just pulling these letters out of wherever he's put. And I go, Bob, you're boring me. Well, his girlfriend, Lara, questioned whether that's really bad radio. We're not that we're doing radio, but how can I say that it's boring? How are the listeners supposed to listen if it's boring? And I'm saying it's boring. Well, because it's boring. And I'm telling the listeners, I'm bored. It's okay for you to be bored, too. Now, bore us with one final question, okay? Or one final comment. Bore me, please. Bore me again.
When I had my conversation with Eli, I said, did you really have to do that? Did you have to say that? I said, but you know what? I kind of like it. This is the first host in the history of television or radio who called his own show boring in the middle of the show.
That's because I wasn't talking, but go ahead. You got one more, please.
I got a lot more stuff here. But, Mr. Zaret, I really don't want to bore you, except for Dan Wiener, who writes in, guys, I love the show. Eli, stop being a bully and let Bob and Denny have some fun.
Hey, you know what? I got big news for you. What? Edwin Jackson's getting the pitch one more time.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
His ERA's 976. I want to see if it can go to 10.
I would like to take this time to apologize for both of you for being a bully. I know I'm a bully. I've been told I'm a bully in the past. I've tried to fix it, but I've fallen short each time. But
and
I'm going to vow
an
now.
An unnamed caller says, hey, Eli, I love the show. But when you tell a story beginning with, I'm not going to name the name, but a certain Laker did this, I hate it. I had a girlfriend who said, hey, don't tell me about the present you were going to give me. Just give me the present. Give the name, Eli, or don't tell the story. That's BS.
Well, the story I was telling actually involved Kobe Bryant, who was in town years ago and had met a restaurateur who Kobe said, I'd love to see your restaurant. The guy invited him, kept the staff late. Cost him a lot to feed Kobe and his girlfriend. He posed for pictures and everything and then stiffed him on the bill. And he was so puzzled. Why would that happen? He makes so much money. I said, because he's an entitled athlete. That's why. And by being there and thrilling your guys, he gave you something in exchange for the meal, period.
Right.
Okay, I told it. Whoever that listener is, kiss my you-know-what from here on
in. Be nice.
I was going to say, this is the first time, and I've only known him 45 years, where I have ever seen a chastened Eli Zaret. Then he has to add that comment, so he wasn't chastened at all.
I'm the master of the backhanded compliment. All right, great show, guys. Now let's get to our special guest, Wayne Fonts.
Here's the way to Barry off the right. Barry to the 45, and bumps to the 40, breaks it 35, 30. He's gone! Unbelievable! Touchdown, Lions, Barry Sanders. Oh, my gosh, what a run. Wow.
The unforgettable run put the finishing touch on a win that vaulted the Lions into the upper echelon of the NFL. It marked the highest point in a dream season, an impossible year for a team that drew its soul and inspiration from adversity. For owner and president William Clay Ford, for NFL Coach of the Year Wayne Fonts, and for the Detroit Lions, thumbs up to a team whose heart made them champion.
How about that, Wayne?
Brings chills to my spine.
Well, and if I told you back in 1991, Wayne, actually Denny and I were there when you played, when you did lose to Washington, but ended a great 13-win season. If we'd said, you have just won the last playoff game for the next 30 years for the Lions, you would have been shocked. It is remarkable, is it not?
Oh, it's definitely hard to believe it. I mean, it's been too long, and the reason why I say that is not the pound at our chest of the 1991 football team. The Lions are a pretty good football team.
Yeah.
Ever since they brought in their quarterback, and this quarterback, I mean, when he first came in, I liked him right away, Stafford, and I heard a lot of bad, you know, he does this, he throws interceptions, but from the day he arrived in Detroit, I thought he was outstanding, and today, you can't. Maybe Tom Brady. You could put ahead of him, but this guy's pretty good. And the Lions football team's getting better and better. But going back, I used to like to rattle, so I want to rattle here a little bit.
Yeah.
If you guys don't mind.
No, please go ahead.
Okay, but anyway, going back to that a game against Dallas and that great run Barry Sanders made. He spun around, made two or three guys miss.
Yep.
And when he scored, he came back to the sideline, and he always hugged all my players. And someone said, what did you tell him? I said, Barry, you did exactly how I taught you to do. I taught him everything he ever knew how to do running the football. He laughed so hard you couldn't believe it.
Is it true, Wayne, because you drafted Barry. That was your first great draft choice. That you got a little pushback in the organization. Not everybody was on the same team to get him, and you insisted. Is that true? Because I know Barry thanked you during his Hall of Fame speech for the faith you had in him.
Well, you know, I never point fingers. You know, I've never done that. All I know is that year Barry Sanders came out, there were a lot of excellent football players coming out. And being a defensive coach, they got the head job with Detroit Lions. A lot of people thought we were going to take Deion Sanders, and then we were going to take the defensive end that went to Kansas City, I believe. But I remember sitting at my desk in the office, and I watched Barry 11 games. I watched every game he played, and he returned punts, he returned kickoffs. The guy was phenomenal. And I remember going to work him out. I told Chuck, I need to go work this guy out. I need to go just see him. And we jumped in a plane, and we went down for his workout. And every scout, every coach from the NFL was there that afternoon. And, of course, he worked out, et cetera, et cetera. And they had him jump up and down. He was running back and forth. And my big thing was, when after watching all the film, I said, this guy can play football. I don't care how high he jumps and how fast he touches that line this night. He could play football. And remember coming back to Detroit and going into Mr. Ford's office, and God bless his soul, going into Mr. Ford's office and saying, Mr. Ford, you love Billy Sims. You love Billy Sims. This guy, we take him, he will make you forget Billy Sims.
Wow.
And I said, this guy is phenomenal. And I even remember Billy Sims. I mean, coming to me and saying, Coach, great choice. This guy's superstar. To me, it was never a decision. After I saw the workout, saw him catch the ball, I immediately took out one of my cigars, put one in my mouth, and took it over to his dad and said, we're going to take your son.
Hey, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
You know, when you left here, you didn't rip anybody. You didn't criticize anybody. You didn't jump off any buildings. I mean, I thought you had every opportunity, especially with the success you had here, and you never did that. Is it something that you just grew up knowing that you just walk away and say, the hell with it, and maybe a new bus will come along, or why?
Well, you know, I figure that I never burned a bridge.
Right.
Because sometimes you might want to go back, cross that bridge again. A lot of people do that. A lot of coaches do that.
Sure.
That was never my style. All I know is that Mr. Ford, regardless of what people think, ever said, Mr. Ford and I had a great relationship, that he did really want to win. And we came close. And for a football team, if you go back, Danny and Eli, if you go back in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, look at one thing that remains constant. It's the guy that takes the snap under the center.
You never had the quarterback. You're right.
You said it, I didn't have to say it. You said it. But that guy wins Super Bowls. Barry Sanders and our excellent offensive line and a pretty doggone good defense took us a long way that year. Yeah. Those guys played their heart out. There was nothing more they could do. We opened the season against Washington that year, and they beat us. And I thought we were going to have a good team my third year. In fact, the press said to me, why did you say in 3 years you guys are going to be pretty good? I said, well, I only had a three-year contract. So I had to say something. So anyway, we go to Washington our third year, and they just shellacked us.
Yep, 45-10, I think, that opening game.
Oh, my God, don't even bring that up. But anyway, right before the game, Barry came to me and said his hip was bothering him all week. And he came to me and he said, after the workout, before the game, he said, Coach, he said, I'm really stoked up here. Now, he's our guy. He's the bread and butter guy. He's going to carry us to where we're going to go. And so I made a decision at that time not to play him. I made a decision at that right before the game, not even to dress him. So we go out there, and, of course, we get beat. The team's on a downer, and we come into the locker room. I remember coming into the locker room, and Mr. Ford was in there, and he said, I thought you said we were going to have a pretty good team. I said, Mr. Ford, you just give me a minute here. Just listen to this. And the players were all getting dressed, and they had their heads down, and I kind of, like, in my own way, I shouted at the guys. I said, hey, put your heads up and get over here. We had a little circle around me, and I said, listen, every one of you guys, turn around. Look at where you're dressing right now, because we will be back here in December to play these guys to go to the Super Bowl.
You were wrong. It was January, but you were close.
I was wrong again. Okay. But anyway, I said, we will be back here to play these guys to go to the Super Bowl. And they went, yes, 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 yes. And they believed that. And then when we got on the bus, their heads were up, and then we had to come back to Detroit. I think we played the 49ers the next week. But anyway, it was a matter of we had an excellent. We didn't have the greatest team, guys. And you guys are reporters. You know that. And but we had a good team. But we had a team that cared. We had a bunch of guys that played for one another. We had, in fact, in the locker room, you know, but we always had a team prayer before we went out. Please, God, don't let anybody get hurt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I always told the guys, look, in your own way, say, don't let the guy down beside you. So we got in a big circle. We held hands like little kids. It's a kid's game. And I said, take a look to your left and to your right and tell the guy to your left and right, I will not let you down today. I'm going to give you 100% of what I have. And it kind of built up around that. The players believe that I'm not going to let Benny Blaze down. I'm not going to let Chris Stillman down. I'm going to play my heart out. And if it's good enough, we win. If it's not, no, we try. And they bought into that. And I think the Detroit Lions now are a type of team that's buying into this quarterback. And their defense is playing well. And I think they're a good football team. I thought they'd been good for 5 years. So I'm rattling off again, but you guys are getting me excited. But no, I had no problem with the Lions. I had no problem with sports. Could I have stayed longer? Should I have said when he said when he came in and said, you know what? And I said, I know, Mr. Ford, it was long enough. No hard feelings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I had a great run. I said I would never coach again, and I had opportunities, and I said I just had enough.
I tell you,
and in fact. Go ahead.
Because Bob's going to ask you a question, but I have to say, because I was telling him before the show, we're sitting there on the Wayne Fon show, which is a story in itself, because it's called The Lions Today in the first year.
Yeah, probably forget that.
The first year, you said, let's call it The Wayne Fon Show. I said, well, I tell you what, you finish over 500 because you were thinking, you're way ahead, and son of what you did. And then we ceremoniously brought that in there. But in 96, I said, If they dump you this year, if they finally, because every year, by the way, they were going to fire you. And then Lomas Brown told me this at a golf outing a few years ago. He said, we'd get together. We were like, 2-6 and say, hey, if they fire Wayne, they're going to bring some asshole in here. And they would rally for you. And they would get you. But I said, we're sitting on the set. And I said to you, so if they let you go, what are you going to do? And you said, you will never see me again. I will go to Florida. I will fish. I don't think you said I'm going to go to the dog track with Denny McClain, but that's all part of having
fun.
Well,
I went a few times, and I called Denny for some advice, and everyone lost.
Oh, he's the worst gambler in history. Go ahead, Bob. Bob's got a question for you. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Bob?
Hey, Wayne, you and I have never met before because I moved to New York before you became head coach of the Lions.
That we never met. How lucky were you?
That's right. Yeah. Here's some fantastic stuff about you that most people do not know. You were a hell of a football player at Michigan State. You're drafted by the Eagles, but instead, you actually play in the original AFL.
Yep, my Titans.
In 1962 for the New York Titans, where you make 4 interceptions that season, returning 1 for an 83-yard touchdown, which was a Jets franchise record that stood for 27 years. And now talk about, you want to continue to ramble? Talk about these two guys.
Yeah.
You played for the legendary Bulldog Turner and owner Harry Wismer, the Port Huron broadcasting exec, who threatened to waive your entire team at one time. Go on.
You know Bob. It's Bob, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you. When the Eagles drafted me, I was a junior. I was redshirted. My freshman year, I kind of tore, stretched my Achilles tendon, so I didn't. I sat out my sophomore year. So I was a junior the year that I got drafted, and I remember I was just sitting in married housing with a lovely wife who was still married, and we just celebrated our 59th wedding anniversary last week.
Wow!
And
hey, so listen, yeah. I got 55 now.
Oh, jeez. He's 4 years old.
But Wayne, the difference between me and you is I can't get rid of her. She knows too much.
I understand exactly what you're saying. don't open up all the closets.
No. Oh, God, no.
But anyway, I was sitting there. In fact, I was cutting my toenails. That's not a bad thing to say. And all of a sudden, the news came on.
Thank you for sharing that.
And the news came on and said, flash news, the Philadelphia Eagles has just selected junior Wayne Fonts. And I said, what? I had no idea. I didn't know a junior could be drafted. Then 2 minutes later, the Jets came on again and said, the New York Jets have just selected Wayne Fonts.
New York Titans. And,
Yeah, they were the Titans, and then following it became the
Jets.
Jets, whatever. But they said the Titans had selected Wayne Fonts. I thought, oh, my goodness. So then I had an opportunity. So I had a choice, my choice was, of course, Hank Buller, who worked for Duffy Daugherty at the time, and God bless Duffy, and I understand Hank is having some problems. But I remember Hank coming over to my place and saying, Duffy sent him over, and he told me, you're not going to leave. I said, no, of course not. I said, I'm going to, finish my senior year. I want to graduate. I'm trying to be a doctor, of course, so I had to stay in school. But but anyway, no, I thought maybe I wasn't ready to be a pro football player. And so I wanted to stay in school, and I did. And I got my degree, et cetera, et cetera. But the reason I went to New York, why did Joe Namath go to New York? Yeah. I wanted to be... It was Broadway Joe. I wanted to be a Broadway Wayne.
Me too.
Yep. So you hurt your knee, so your pro career ended quickly. And then coaching at Dayton, you're coaching under John McVay. Now, McVay, is that the grandfather of Sean McVay? And if so, look at the Sean McVay who was in his mid-30s. How do you assess him as a coach and how the game has changed that enables a guy like that to become such a such a trend-setting young coach?
Yeah, Sean McVay is the grandson of John McVay.
Oh, yes.
John McVay had for a head coach at the University of Dayton, he put out a lot of excellent football coaches. And his one of his best friends, of course, was Jimmy Gruden and my brother Lenny and myself. And George Perlis worked for John McVay.
I'll be darned.
Tom Moore worked for John McVay. I did. And Jimmy Gruden had two sons that end up going to Dayton. One was John Gruden, who now is coaching with the Raiders.
Isn't that something?
And his son, his other son, Jay Gruden, was coaching with Washington, and he hired Sean McVay. So they grew up together. And Sean McVay, I remember Jimmy Gruden sitting down and telling me, he said, this Sean McVay is brilliant. He's got a brilliant mind. He's young. And he's a very talented type of guy. So he was at Washington for a couple of years, and then they hired him at the Rams. And I'll tell you this, I know him well. I see him every year at the Outback Bowl party. And he's intelligent, excellent young man. Not only does he know his X and O, but I think he gets along well with his players, and that's a plus.
So you're still getting invites to parties?
Oh yes, I get to pick and choose.
So why don't you? So why don't you call the old 31 game winner and we'll go to the parties together?
You know what? I go in a walker. You probably want a wheelchair, so they don't want us to go.
Yeah,
to the party.
Yeah, I'll need a wheelchair.
Well, I think it was your second year, maybe, and you say to us, we're going to run this new offense. It's called the run and shoot. And what was that? Was that, which to me, and I don't pretend to understand NFL offense, it seems like it was kind of a precursor from all this air raid and all the stuff we have today. Was it kind of a precursor, and was that kind of forced on you, or is that something that you embraced at the time?
No, you know what? And I'm trying to go way back when I got the job. I remember that I was sitting in the office when I got the job. I was back in my office, And the game has changed, guys. Yeah. When I coached and when I played, there were two tight ends or two backs, one wide receiver, two wide receivers, one back, two tight, whatever it was. And this guy Miles Davis had a better idea, and his idea was spread the field, go four wideouts. And I remember I hired him. We put that in. And by the way, Miles Davis was an excellent football coach. I've been around a lot of coaches. He worked as hard as any offensive coach I've been around, along like with Tom Moore. He was Miles was a hard worker, and he believed in his four wideout deal. And I remember we got that year we were going to play against Denver in the Hall of Fame game. The Hall of Fame game, the first game of the season. And I remember Dan Reeves coming up to me and said, this is just one of those warm-up games. Why don't you come and play tight ends and this and that? So instead of spreading the field. And I said, and he said, and no blitzing. I said, okay, we won't blitz. I said, but Dan, this is our offense. He said, you're going to run this every – I said, we're going to run this every play. We're going to run four wide out every play. And if you take a look at now what has happened, the game has changed.
Yeah.
This game now is basketball on the grass. You go out and get the best wide receivers you can find and go play football. And it's difficult to play defense.
Yeah. Guy's got to be so versatile on defense. You know, I just got one more for you.
And I got one more, too.
Denny and I were doing the Eli and Denny show back then, as well as I was doing the Wayne Font show. You were very busy. And I used to tell people, and I still did, that the cast of characters that you had, the personality in that locker room, not that I'm in that many anymore, between Spielman and Lomas and Barry and Rodney Peete and Jim Arnold and Spindler, what a cast of characters.
Unbelievable.
I mean, just Jerry Ball. I mean, Benny Blades. Just hilarious people. And Denny and I would come in there, and during lunch, we'd play wiffle ball with your players. And we're swinging and missing and whooping and hollering. And that's why they loved you. And that's why they were so fearful. And sure enough, they go in the opposite direction when they fire you, bringing Bobby Ross, who was kind of a pill, and the players hated it. But it just seemed to me, and I don't know whether it's attributable to you or the type of players, but I've never seen personality like on those squads you had back then in all my years.
You know what? You're absolutely correct. They were all different. They had their own ways. They had different. They're all in music. Chris Billman used to prance up and down in the lock in the shower before the game. The other guys would be listening. Barry Sanders would be laying on the floor, ready to go to sleep before the game. I mean, these guys were different. But you know, and Spindler was just crazy.
Yeah.
But the best thing about it was, in the bottom line, when that bell rang, they became one. Yeah. They were one. They were one team, and that was the difference. Even though we didn't have the guy under the center, we had some good ones, but we didn't have the Joe Montanas. They played their heart out because they believed in one another, and I can't tell you that enough. That's so important, and it was so important for me to establish that type of atmosphere in the locker room.
Sure,
and I hope you understand this. Yeah. And people say, well, maybe I was too eager, but things that people didn't understand was, and you could ask Lomas this and whatever, that we had a fine line. And we were all on that line. Excuse me. We were all on that line because I treated them equal. I treated them like men. They were guys. They were men playing a kid's game. But if anyone crossed that line to challenge my authority, all I had to do was say, hey, and they would get back on that line. They had tremendous respect for me because I had respect for them, and that's why I think we were successful as we were.
And I'll tell you something else. You had the ability to communicate with the players, and you know what? A lot of managers, they like to talk down the players, and you weren't there. You were at that level. You were able to do that and communicate and you know, develop the relationships that you did. And listen, everybody that we see that was a former, almost everybody I see that was a former Lion, they still talk glowingly about you. I mean, they wish.
Appreciate
well,
that.
Look,
they wish it had never happened. You never left here. Hell, with the way some of them talk, you'd still be here.
When you say to guys that the Lions went to the playoffs five times, yep, and wait, they go, what? Five times? And I will say this, not to get the hearts and flowers going too much and get people crying in the audience. Barry did say that a coach can show affection and appreciation and still win, and that sounds like what you were saying.
So. One last question. When is the last time you've been in Detroit?
Let's see. I haven't been back there, God. It's cold there 10 months a year.
That answers it.
I got used to this warm weather. It's been a long time, guys. I can't remember when. Oh, I know the last time I was there. The last time I was there, at Mr. Ford's testimonial memorial service. Yeah, I flew back for that.
And that's about it?
That's about it.
Holy cow.
You know, one other thing, I know I'm talking too much.
No, that's
you know,
all right.
People complain about, my God, you never hit Barry in practice. You never scrimmaged Barry. You never did to Barry. And it wasn't, they said, what the other players have to say? The other players understood it.
Yep.
They understood this was the guy that was going to give you 100% every time he touched the ball. And when practice ended, he was the last guy off the practice field. He was the last guy going to lunch because he was always working out. So the players had no problems with Barry never being hit on the practice field. I remember one time we had a scrimmage going on, and I put Barry in. And whenever I put Barry in, I would go to the defense and say, okay, now I'm putting Barry in here. Now, don't touch him. and I said, don't you guys touch him. And I remember Spielman and Jerry Ball said, we're going to kick his ass. Oh, I can't say that, can I?
Yes, you can.
We're going to kick his ass. I said, you guys crazy? Don't touch this guy.
Anyway.
So they got down. We handed the ball to Barry, and they just opened the gates, and he went running. I had a lot of fun coaching. But I remember Eli. I remember when I got fired. I remember I went to a golf outing not too long after that. And I was around the press because they came over and said, how you doing? Excuse me. And I said, 5 years from now, you press people will understand this team will be one of the best teams the Lions have ever had.
That's right.
In the modern era. I said, 5 years from now, you'll say, you know what? Wayne Fonts did a good job here. And I walked away.
Yep. Well, you did walk away with the most wins in Lions history, 67. And
1 second. After you left here, did any other job opportunity? I can't believe other job opportunities
he said he had
did
some
not
offers.
Come to you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I had opportunities. I had opportunities, and I always told my wife I was done. My wife had my picture on the refrigerator. I was 20 pounds overweight. I looked like I was death warmed over. I was sitting in my soft chair, and I couldn't breathe. You know, one of those things.
Yeah.
So I said, and my wife said, and my kids said, Dad, give it up. So I told the press I was going to give it up. But I was sitting there, and I got phone calls from the assistant coaches, et cetera, et cetera. And I got phone calls from the head coaches in college. And then I told my wife, there's only one job that I would take in the NFL if I got a chance to get that job. And that phone call came.
Oh.
It came. I was laying in bed. It came early in the morning. I'm a late riser. Came and my wife said, honey, it's so and so. I said, oh my God. And she said to me, please don't do this. So I took the phone and I talked to these people and they said, we know you, we won't meet you in Detroit. We won't meet you here. We'll meet you somewhere else, anywhere. We just like to talk to you. And I said, no, thank you very much. And then I knew I was done. But it was a job that I really wanted. But I had enough. Barry Sanders, I said, Barry, why are you retiring? Why? Because he called me. I said, Barry, why are you doing this? He said, Coach, are you ever going to come back? I said, no. He said, why? I said, Barry, I had enough. He said, Coach, I had enough. And you gotta take your hat off to a guy that sure. knows when he's done, and you gotta know, and he knows that he could have broke every record known to man. But that wasn't important. He had enough.
In fact, I was going to let you go here, but now that you brought that up, one of the big mysteries, he takes himself out his rookie year in the final game of the season when he can win the rushing title. And I can see why you say because he had enough. He could have passed Peyton for number one. What was it about Barry? He was a smart guy, a great guy, obviously a great player. He just hated attention. Is that what it was?
No question about it. You know, it was never about Barry. And going back to that first year, he's a rookie. We're playing Atlanta, and we're just beating him up pretty good. And it was a 4 o'clock game, so we were the last game of the year. There was no night game. There was the last 4 o'clock was the last game, and I take him out. And I remember I take him out. He comes running off the field, and my PR guy comes running down from the press box. He said, "Yeah, put Barry back in." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "He needs 6 yards to lead the league in rushing." Hey,
Christian
Okoye
was Christian Okoye was ahead of him, right?
Yeah. He said, "You need 6 yards, and you got a whole quarter to do it." I could have given him 1-2 handoffs, he'd have broken.
Sure.
So I went to him. I said, "Barry, you have an opportunity to lead the league in rushing as a rookie, first time ever. You want to go back in?" He said, "Coach, no, I don't need to do that." He said, "Let so-and-so play." He said, I don't care about records."
That's incredible.
And I said, "Here's it." I said, "This is unreal." I said, "I got it. What a guy. What a guy."
Wayne, can you imagine any kids doing that today?
No, not at all.
Not at all. I mean, you got guys in baseball that stand there and watch the home runs go 400 feet, 500 feet, and you got guys in footballs doing dances and jigs out in the end zone. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just, it's gotten so far out of hand.
I see guys now, because I'm saying this because I played defensive back, whatever, in football. And I used to make a lot of tackles, and I intercepted passes. By the way, I had 4 or 5 interceptions. In 5 games, I broke my leg, so I had all those interceptions. I was headed to the Pro Bowl, guys. But anyway, a big tackle came out, and he ran me over. And I said, "Where'd he come from?" But anyway, it's a difficult thing. You make a tackle. I saw a guy make a tackle in a game yesterday. He got up. And he did a flip, pounded his chest. He made a tackle.
Yeah.
Yep. He just made a tackle.
And he's probably down by 3 touchdowns at the time.
The game was over, and they lost. He made a tackle.
Oh, we could go on and on about Antonio Brown. We're going to let you go, man. Great talking to you again, Wayne. Really appreciate it. Good hearing your voice.
Guys. Wayne, thank you very much. And I'm going to give you a call.
Hey, listen, go Lions.
Yes, go Lions. And I'm going to give you a call later today, okay?
All right, guys.
Thanks, Lynn. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
I have to say that was a lot of fun for me just to listen to the three of you, because again, I was long gone to New York, and I did cover Daryl Rogers, and I love Daryl both at Michigan State and with the Lions. This guy sounds like he would have been a hell of a lot of fun to cover, to get quotes.
It was the best. It was terrific.
Bob,
total players.
Take my word for it. Yeah. He was a lot of fun to be around all the time. Whether it was on the football field, whether it was in the locker room, whether it was at the dog track, the horse track, the casino,
but
he was just plain fun.
But the players didn't take advantage of him. They noticed how special it was, and he knew how to lower put his foot down.
His communication skills were the best I ever saw.
This show has gone on forever. We thank you all for listening, and look forward to you hearing us again on Thursday.
Have a good one.
For another No Filter Sports.
Thanks, everybody.